I think that when you look at the greatness of Patrick Mahomes and what he brings to the table, combined with the fact that what he's been working with, DeAndre Hopkins, some would argue his best days may be behind him, but he's still a big-time receiver. Make no mistake about it, he's still somebody that you can rely upon. And if you have a reliable weapon to help you move the chains, and your quarterback is Patrick Mahomes, as opposed to Will Levis or somebody like that, you're in a pretty damn good situation if you're DeAndre Hopkins. So I look at it from that standpoint, and I say, you look at his talent along with what Patrick Mahomes brings to the table, along with the Chiefs having an elite defense with Andy Reid calling plays on offense. I think this definitely puts them over the hump.
Wow, we played a Stephen A. clip where he wasn't like screaming about something. That on the Hopkins trade that happened yesterday, DeAndre Hopkins to the Kansas City Chiefs. Talk some fantasy here with Scott Pianowski of Yahoo, one of our favorite conversations of the week here on a Thursday. Morning, Scott. How are you doing today?
Doing great. We got everybody in action. No buys this week, so yeah. You're rolling out a strong fantasy lineup.
Is that weird, by the way? No buys?
No, I actually...
After buys have happened?
I actually looked into it, and I checked in with the league, and I was told it completely random, and it actually happened one time during the season last year, during the middle of the season. So there were theories, Scott, that maybe it's because the NBA was starting up, and they didn't want to lose ratings to NBA during the week, but I looked into it, and... I was told it was totally random.
Gotcha.
I've never understood why 32 teams, why shouldn't there be eight different bye week segments of four teams each? But there's sometimes you have two teams on bye, sometimes you have four teams on bye.
Yeah.
Later in the season, there are weeks where we have six teams on bye. There are byes in week 14, which is a critical positional week for a lot of fantasy leagues. So I've never understood the rhyme and reason. Obviously, it's difficult to set a schedule. You have a lot of planes to land.
Yeah.
I do think someday they're going to have and they tried this once, I think 1990, 1991, and there were reasons why teams didn't like it. I think they're eventually going to go back to two bye weeks, and they'll try to tuck in one of those bye weeks to Thursday night appearances so that players don't have to have these very unusual short turnarounds, because I don't think that's conducive to the player health, to the quality of the product. Sometimes you see good Thursday games, sometimes you don't. A lot of times it's, who's the matchup and all that stuff. But I think that's down the road. The problem is they don't want the season ending at some ungodly time. It wasn't that long ago the Super Bowl was played in the middle of January, right? Now it's the middle of February, but I think a two bye week season, and I know nobody called in. Nobody listened in today to hear me talk about bye week.
No, I get it. I will just say, though, that would probably come with conjunction with an 18-game schedule, which I think is going to happen sooner rather than later.
Sure.
They're actually... Little shout out here to people at the University of Buffalo. There's a team over there that has created the algorithms for that type of schedule, that they're at the forefront of it, that I've talked
to. They already have it.
Yeah, they've done things like that. So pretty cool stuff. Anyway, really interesting. And one other note on this, if the Jags had elected, they could have had their bye this week, because teams are allowed to choose if they want to have a bye after playing internationally. But most teams are going away from that model because they've done some analytic work on that, and it's not conducive for them. So here we are with all 32 teams playing this week, Scott.
Yeah,
If I were a team, I wouldn't want to buy early, right? I mean, injuries just pile up, and we saw it's been a brutal last couple of weeks. It's funny, before the season, right, the idea was, okay, draft those receivers early. They're more durable, or maybe not more durable, but they aren't in harm's way as much. They don't get hurt as much. Well, tell that to the Brandon Ayuk manager. Tell that to the Chris Godwin manager. Tell that to the Mike Evans manager. It just feels like, obviously, Rashee Rice was one of the right answers. He got hurt a while ago. And I guess we can fold that into DeAndre Hopkins. I'm less bullish than the market is. I know it's Andy Reid. I know it's Patrick Mahomes. And every week we try out this stat. The last top 10 fantasy finish for Patrick Mahomes dates back to Thanksgiving of last year. And by the way, it's almost Halloween. We're talking like 11 months now.
And top 10, not like top 5, like top 3, top 10.
Exactly. For a guy who was drafted, in a lot of leagues, maybe the first quarterback, top 3 or top 4 everywhere. Until Lamar Jackson went off on Monday night, Mahomes was still the MVP favorite, which speaks to just the formula of the MVP. You got to have, the one or two seed. Kansas City's undefeated. Mm-hmm. Quarterbacks get too much credit when they win, not too much blame when they lose a lot of times. But still a wonderful player. But the pieces, Worthy's been a little bit of a disappointment. They had plans for Hollywood Brown. He was hurt before the season started. Rice was off and running as one of those right answers. He gets hurt. Kelsey is not the same player now, and maybe his final season. We saw last year they kind of soft-pedaled Kelsey and then turned him on in the playoffs. Maybe we'll see his production spike then, but he doesn't look like an electric player. Tight ends did make a nice comeback the last season. I finally can look at the tight end board and not want to throw up. But Kelsey's not one of the guys I'm excited to play, even though you have to give him a good ranking. If I had DeAndre Hopkins, I would go to my opponents. I would say, hey, I got pretty good wide receiver depth. Don't mention Hopkins by name. Just throw them the entire board. Doesn't matter if you want to trade them or not. And see if they'll land on Hopkins, because my expectations are muted.
I'm literally going to do this in like 15 minutes when we're done here. I have my one team with Hopkins. All that being said, while we're on the Chiefs, but Jeremy and Joe, Jeremy's off today, sales in. So Scott, like, is Mahomes a buy low right now? Like, should you be looking to trade for him? I've wondered if him being the MVP favorite isn't just, like, not that he would be the MVP if the season ended today, but if it's a bet by the books that the numbers are going to bounce back. He's not going to look like this. He's not going to put up more picks than touchdowns for the whole season.
That's part of it. Also, just the formula of the MVP, that if the Chiefs go 15-2, they're going to look for a reason to give it to Mahomes. And we know the MVP, I wish a million years ago they called it most outstanding player. So J.J. Watt could win it when he deserved it. Or Cooper Kupp, I think, was the best player in football 3 years ago. Another player, by the way, who could get traded. The Rams have made it known that he's available for a number two pick. And isn't it just fun? I mean, you guys obviously saw this with Cooper last week, that we're seeing trades in a league that people used to be afraid to make them, reluctant. You know, you have to dig up infrastructure. Can somebody get acclimated? I actually picked up Mahomes in my guillotine league for $5 just as a backup, and I'm still going to play Geno Smith over him. I thought, well, okay, I didn't like Matthew Stafford as my backup. I wouldn't mind having Mahomes, but he's as a number two, and I have no confidence playing him. To tell yourself a story that Mahomes is going to be fantasy playable again, you get to tell yourself a story that one of the receivers is going to come along for the ride. And I'm almost glad that I wasn't on the segment last week. I apologize for the late cancellation on that, because I would have told you, everybody, that Juju Smith-Schuster was in a great spot. I love what I saw in his first game back. And then, of course, he gets hurt early in that game last week against the Niners. And now he's already been ruled out so quickly, you get to figure he's going to miss multiple weeks. The Hopkins trade probably speaks to that too. But Mahomes' whole career, as great as he is, he's had a Tyreek Hill to drag him. He's had a Travis Kelce to drag him. Rice was turning into a superstar. I just don't see those players who are going to make him look good. He's just another guy. And, you know, you drafted Geno Smith as a backup. He's your number one. Until the Tampa Bay receivers got hurt, Baker Mayfield was the right guy to play over Patrick Mahomes. You might play Bo Nix over Mahomes this week because Carolina is that bad. And Nix is running so aggressively, you know, I don't know how many touchdowns he'll throw, but he'll probably run for 70 yards. And it comes down to one very simple concept. Fantasy is about numbers. It's not about names. And at some point, you have to let go of what the name is. And I know if the NFL redrafted, Mahomes would probably go first. But they just don't have the pieces right now.
Well, how about the receivers that were traded last week? Scott Pienowski in the Western Hotline. Cooper here and Davante Adams in New York. How optimistic would you be about Cooper and his fantasy odds after what he did on Sunday? And even just to those two, like, who would you rank higher, I guess, rest of season, Adams or Cooper?
Yeah, I think it would be Cooper. You know, he has a productive game on very limited opportunity. They didn't expose him to a lot. At one point, he wasn't even sure where to line up. Like, oh, okay, you go over here, run down there. It's almost like a schoolyard game. But what really adds to my optimism for Cooper is that we've seen this story before, where he was traded from the Raiders to the Cowboys back in 2017-18, I forget what year it was, but Cooper was better with the Cowboys in the second part of the year. You love to see players rescued from a bad culture. Obviously, the Raiders are kind of going nowhere. There's a shipwreck in Cleveland. So Adams gets out of the Raiders situation, and Cooper gets away from Cleveland. And thank God we don't have to watch Deshaun Watson play anymore. I don't wish injury on anybody, but we will not miss just him on the field. And just that whole elephant in the room in Cleveland is ugly. But I think Cooper's a little bit safer because he's got more delineation between him and the other receivers in Buffalo, where Adams is going to have to share with Garrett Wilson, who I know he's been frustrating. And, you know, other than Terry McLaurin, all those younger Ohio State receivers have been fantasy losses right now, and it's been frustrating. And I don't know who's going to turn it around and who isn't. I think Garrett Wilson's probably the safest bet in that group, but I still rank Wilson a little bit higher than Adams. Adams is 32. Wilson's, what, 8-9 years younger, something like that. We can't discount that. So Adams, to me, high-end wide receiver 3. I think Cooper's a high-end wide receiver 2 who could creep into wide receiver 1 territory eventually. Hopefully, Buffalo will start throwing the ball more proactively. I mean, Josh Allen has a season high in pass attempts. It was only 33, right? We'd like to see a little bit more pass rate over expectation from Buffalo. But finally, a room that had a bunch of really good bass players. You need a lead guitarist. I think Amari Cooper could be that lead guitarist.
Scott, what do we do with the Buccaneers wide receivers here? I mean, how do we try and figure out who's going to be the guy to target on the waiver wire? And how?
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
How all this shakes out?
It's a great question. Well, first of all, Godwin was having a career year, and it was spurred by him going back to the slot. So we want to know, where do those slot reps come from? McMillan, Washington, part of that high-flying offense last year with Phoenix and Adunze and Polk and all those guys, has slot experience. He's flashed a little bit. He had a long touchdown on opening day. He didn't have a great game on Monday, but they'll have a week to coach him up. I would think he's the first player people probably look to on waivers. I support that. Sterling Shepard and Mayfield did play together in college. That can't be discounted. Trey Palmer is an interesting player. I don't have a pound-the-table recommendation. I think McMillan's probably the most likely to get slot snaps, so I would lean there. But, again, maybe Mayfield and Shepard, the familiarity there comes to play. One thing I do feel very powerful about is that, you know, Cade Otton, 10 catches on Monday, he'd been coming into his own anyway. He's going to have a healthy share here. And also Rashad White, who was dealing with touches from two other teammates, and we're worried about that. He's caught, 21 of 23 targets or something like that. He's a really good catch radius. Anything near him, he's going to catch. Irving's not a bad receiver either. But I think Rashad White's value benefits here. Otten's value benefits here. If I had to place a chip on the Tampa Bay receiver, it would be McMillan. But in deeper leagues, if you want to try Palmer, you want to try Shepard, I think that makes sense too.
How big an impact does the Cleveland offense get now that Watson's out and Winston is in?
It can't get any worse, right? Much we see when the Raiders receiver room got all beat up. It's like, okay, Brock Bowers, he's the number one guy. I feel similar about that in Cleveland, where Njoku, the number one target. Obviously, he just needs to be healthy. He was very good last week. And Cedric Tillman was better than Jerry Jeudy. I'm at the point where maybe just Jerry Jeudy can't play. I know he was a star at Alabama. I know he was a first-round pick. The Broncos were kind of tired of waiting for him to come around, and nothing's really gone his way in Cleveland, but I think Judy's part of the problem. I have Njoku, if healthy, top six, top seven tight end easily, and Cedric Tillman was somebody I was proactively going after on waivers. I just hope they let Jameis be Jameis. He's going to throw, and by the way, we don't even know past this week if he'll even be the starter. I mean, maybe Dorian Thompson-Robinson will get some play. He was the first guy they went to as they had Jameis as the emergency quarterback, turned into an emergency situation last week. I think the offense is more interesting with Winston, and DTR did not play well at all last week, although you don't want to be too unfair about a mid-game appearance because the team wasn't prepared for it. But Winston makes this offense more interesting. I don't know exactly what happened to Watson, where he did a lot of sketchy things off the field. You know, people can have their opinions on that. I mean, he may not be a good dude, but it seemed like his confidence was beat out of him and his arm strength wasn't up to snuff. Just by having a competent quarterback, just think about what Carolina did for a minute with Andy Dalton. I realize that hasn't worked out for the last few weeks, and I've been picking Carolina in my picks pool every week and getting creamed for it. But just having a competent quarterback in the Cleveland room, all I want is this offense to give me 240 yards and a touchdown or two, and I'll divvy it up the way I want. They weren't getting anything close to that with Watson. I think they have a fighting chance with Winston.
Scott Pianowski on the Wester Hotline. In terms of tonight's game, Vikings at Rams, Kupp is going to play, but would you, or I guess that was the report, but would you feel comfortable putting him in a lineup? I don't know. With the trade rumors, I feel like I'd be scared that he's not going to have a full workload.
It's a great question. And normally in those situations, I err towards being conservative, the prove it game, the show me game. I was telling people not to play Nick Chubb last week. I know he had the touchdown, but he wasn't efficient otherwise. So I would, if you have a good receiver room, if you have a type of roster where it would be reasonable to bench Cup and it's kind of a seam call for you, my default would be to not play him and see what happens, thinking they won't overexpose him. Also, the Rams aren't going anywhere this year, so it's not like they're in a situation where they have to win to, you know, get to first place or get to the playoff hunt. I think they know it's a lost season. And they probably, I get the idea, what they probably want to do is show, is let Cup play enough to show opposing teams that he's healthy, but not play him so much that there's the risk of aggravation or something going wrong. So there may be some teams you have to play him. Maybe you lost other pieces. Maybe you just don't have a good fit this week at receiver. But if you have something that's a reasonable alternative, anything on the borderline, I'm going to rest Cup.
All right. In terms of the Viking side of things, the running back situation, Jones looks healthy now, right?
He does.
Okay. Yeah. And then Hockenson's going to be coming back soon, so.
Maybe. And by the way, I would follow Kevin O'Connell to a burning building at this point. And Darnold has been consistent every week. He's also sneaky athletic. He can run for 20 to 40 yards if needed. Obviously, Jefferson is terrific. Addison's a pretty good number two. Naylor has had moments. Hockenson isn't really an electric player, but he's just another big body in the middle of the field, which makes you harder to defend. I thought Minnesota showed a lot of moxie. They could have easily won that game against Detroit last week. I'm looking forward to when they play again. But Kevin O'Connell, last year, remember, after Cousins got hurt, Justin Jefferson, when he came back, was just as good with the backups they were playing. They were playing a lot of guys who weren't NFL starters, and they were just fine. And Sam Darnold was the number two pick in his class. He had a very unusual run out with getting sick. He got mono. He was hurt a lot. He kind of got the confidence beat out of him with the Jets. Then he bounced around as a backup. Still younger than Joe Burrow. I think it's entirely possible that Darnold, is he going to be a superstar? No, but he replaced Kirk Cousins. Could he have kind of a Kirk Cousins type of career? Ironically, Cousins hasn't really had a great fantasy season. He was quarterback 1 week, quarterback 8 1 week. He's been outside the top 20 in every other week. But I think Sam Darnold has proven he can be an NFL starter for the next 5-6 seasons.
Maybe the biggest variance this week could be the return of Tua and how that impacts the offense. Like, what do you see? Because I have Waddle on one of my teams. I just can't play him. Right?
I just actually, Scott, right before we talked, I just traded for Waddle.
I mean, so what happens here? How much does this matter, do you think, to what's going to happen going forward here with this offense?
That's a great question. So, I mean, this is basically an offense where they're unplugged without Tua, and now they're back plugged in. They had no chance with the guys they were playing, with Huntley, a lot of teams are screwed if the backups have to play, Miami especially so. I don't know how long Tua will be healthy. You shudder every time he gets hit. I'm sure Mike McDaniel is scripting a bunch of stuff where Tua's taking a very quick drop and getting rid of the ball. They don't want him holding it at all. But I mean, when from Tyreek Hill was, you had to play him, but you didn't have expectations. You probably couldn't have played Waddle. ATN hasn't been good in the entire offense, just totally no buoyancy at all. I got to figure that they're back in play. I love going to get Waddle. Not that he's not guaranteed anything. I mean, Waddle didn't have a great season last year, but the point is he's got plausible upside. You can easily tell yourself a story that if Tua stays healthy, Jalen Waddle could be a top 20 receiver. So I like getting him now before we get the reveal. And I don't like McDaniel's getting a lot of criticism right now because of how they've looked. But when you don't have a quarterback, there are no good plays to call.
Yep. Or even a good backup. I mean, Huntley had just arrived there, and Boyle still being the NFL blows my mind if you look at his college stats.
Oh, he's what, one touchdown, 13 or 14 picks?
One touchdown, 13 picks at UConn, yeah. And, like, I don't even understand how he's in the league.
The quarterback factory that is UConn. I know, maybe if Danny Hurley had coached him up, something would have happened. But
right.
I don't understand that at all.
Yep.